Good afternoon. And what side is this? This is side two. Time.
Well, we left off with the transition. The letter expressed, let's see, we already finished that. We understand that there were far too many keys to the office available, and with no idea who had them. One of the sad stories about this time is for Jimmy to find the locks changed and not know in advance that this was going to happen. Was this a decision of the WSO board or simply an oversight? The board did instruct that the locks be changed and that only four copies of the keys given out. They did not include Jimmy. It was not stated in the discussion or in the motion who was to explain to any or all of the other key holders who had keys or not. It is possible Jimmy had tried the key that he had and it didn't work, but the lock wasn't changed for about a week, which was after Jimmy had stopped coming in at the beginning anyway, so I don't know that he ever had that experience.
It's been rumored that that's what happened.
It's a good romantic story in terms of conflict.
Yeah.
I don't know the fact about it or not.
Is Betty still alive?
Yes, she is, as far as I know.
So she would be the person to ask about that.
Well, I don't know if she was with him when he tried or if he did. The office was in a major disarray when you came on board. Checks missing on this place. Literature orders not filled. General disorder and lack of business practices. Is that an accurate picture of what shape the WSO was in? The office was in some disarray in that sense, to my standard of business practice. In terms of how Jimmy looked at how the office was to be managed, it was not in disarray. So it is not really fair to Jimmy to say, unless you're accusing him of not being able to manage properly, that it was in disarray. There were checks all over the place at the time, and it took me until Thursday to get all the checks in the bank.
Four days.
And there was, I don't remember, I have it written, there's someplace probably $13,000 in money laying around the office.
Some in cash.
Not very much, you know, a few dollars here, a few dollars there.
Yeah.
Mostly in money orders and checks.
Yeah.
And some of them quite old. About literature orders not filled. Well, all the orders laying with checks on them were not filled. Some of those were quite old, and we did our best to quickly fill them, but we didn't have all the literature, which was the problem, why they were still there. About lack of business practices, my business practices were different, and of course, need have changed. But any person who comes in to manage an organization is going to change them. Is it that? Okay, we know that's the picture. Okay. You began a series of letters on a regular basis for a while, reporting on what was being done. How long did you do this? I began those about 14 days after I started work, and I called them the newsletter.
Oh, there are.
And the intent of that was to begin to inform the fellowship of what was going on in the office, to begin to remove the mystique and remove the barrier of lack of information. And as far as I know, the Newsline as a publication is still being published. I used to have at the end of that a section that I kind of reserved to me to comment on things that I was concerned about that might not more specifically pertain to printing or something else. I included that as a feature of the Newsline until I left. Are we going to have another stop here for a reason?
I don't know who that is.
Well, we'll continue here. Why did it stop? My part stopped when I left. Otherwise, I believe the Newsline is still continuing. One of your first major concerns was about the fellowship's tax status, and you hired a consultant to make the recommend solutions.
Hi. Okay. I just holler when you go in. There's somebody in there. She's female, so.
Okay, we'll take this question in parts because it's not valid the way it's originally worded. One of your first major concerns was about the fellowship's tax status. Yes, that is correct. At the time, there was a number which was purported to be the tax-exempt number for the office, pasted all over the walls of the office number of the telephone. And on the Sunday that I came in, I removed all those numbers. That number in the eye of the Internal Revenue Service pertains just to that business or activity that is going to report all the money that is handled through the use of that number. So if that number were legitimate and were being used in Florida, the office had an obligation to include the money that went to the account in Florida in the tax return of the World Service Office. An impossible situation.
Yeah.
I did my best over the following months to put an end to that practice.
Mm-hmm.
It took us a long time to find a consultant.
Thanks, consultant.
From my prior experiences with nonprofit organizations, I was fairly closely knowledgeable of the tax responsibilities of the nonprofit corporations. And I was familiar with the fact that, as I understood NA as a whole at the time, it was not complying with tax law. The office was complying with tax law.
As in sales tax?
As, no, not in sales tax. Wasn't doing that.
Wasn't doing that
No. We solved that problem soon thereafter. But as far as the Internal Revenue Service was concerned, the office made an annual report. And I believe it was accurate. I don't have any reason to doubt that. But about the other use of the number for people outside of the office, that was not appropriate.
Right.
That was not included. So in that sense, yeah, the office tax return is incorrect.
Mm-hmm. Because of the use of that number outside of the office.
By others, yeah. Mm-hmm. We did not find, and I honestly looked all the time, through every person who I knew who knew law or taxes, to find a person who could help us with this matter. It was only in 1987, 6 years, what, 5 years later, 4 years later, that we actually found an attorney who understood as much tax law as I did. And this man was very bright. We hired him to prepare for the board of directors and the fellowship if necessary the options that existed in tax law for the fellowship as a whole in order to satisfy its responsibilities across the fellowship.
Now, is that still the same sheet of options that
I don't
still
know
around? Yeah.
I don't know which ones. Among the last things that occurred while I was still an employee was his final reports were made available to me, and I transcribed his legalese into a
layman
packet of information that I left with the board of the office and hoped that they would carry on. I don't know whatever came of that. But it was the attorney had done a very good job. He had made no recommendations. He had digested the law and explained it in ways that we could use. The recommendations had to come from us understanding what the law was and choose them.
Us being the fellowship or the office?
The conference.
The conference.
The conference. The board of directors and the office couldn't make that decision about what to do. The best it could do was present the options to the conference and make its suggestions. The conference had to make a decision. I don't know if they've ever gone that far. These discussions continue for years. Do you feel that the right decisions have been made after all your efforts? Because I don't know what's been done, so I don't know the answer to the question.
I think it's still ongoing. What
what to do. Next question is, were the difficulties with the first printing settled to your satisfaction?
Well, the basic text?
I was not involved with the first printing.
That's when Jimmy was an office manager?
Yes.
And it took a year to get it printed?
Well, in the material that I've been collecting for writing about my part in the history of NA and what I can gather of factual information about the earlier parts of the history, this occupies about 25 pages. In brief...
That's the boat.
Yeah, that's not our stomachs hungering for lunch. What I could tell you about the first printing was that the literature committee left the conference in 1982 after the book had been adopted by the fellowship with the requirement to prepare a final draft of the basic text to give to the office that the office would then work from. The conference was told by the literature committee that there were some minor corrections and errors that needed to be fixed before it was turned over to the office for publication.
The literature committee said that?
That was explained on the floor of the conference and after the conference by Page. So they went back with that responsibility. Some months later, the office asked about this and was told by a literature committee they had not finished the work, but they were expected to finish it soon.
Mm.
A letter was written by the literature committee chairperson, Page, on September 15th that at that time gave the office what the literature committee thought were its ownership rights and copyrights to the book. And from best we can determine, at that time transmitted the actual copy they wanted the office to work with. So the first, May, June, July, August, to the middle of September, was a delay caused by the literature.
5 months of delay.
The office then actually had gone ahead before they received that and decided on the printer. And as soon as they got the copy, they started doing the typesetting. Jimmy went in, apparently on a regular basis, to proofread the typesetting against the original that the literature committee had set. And sometime he found the language in the fourth and ninth traditions that he felt was not correct, Narcotics Anonymous philosophy, and set about to do something about it. He called the chairperson of the Board of Trustees and explained the problem. He called the chairperson, it was Chuck Skinner. And he called Bob Raymar, who was chairperson of the World Service Conference. And I believe he talked to Phil Perez, who was the chair of the Board of Directors. But that would have been an easy conversation.
Yeah.
They had a meeting the very night that he called Chuck Skinner and Bob Raymar. And after some discussion, all the others agreed that this was a problem, that this language would be inconsistent with what they understood to be the philosophy of Narcotics Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And after looking at several options of how to fix the situation, they elected essentially to just delete the language in its entirety. In the fourth tradition language, it was about a line and a quarter, a line and a half.
Yeah.
And in the ninth, it was a bit longer, if I remember. I don't remember the words. And they
not in any, I think.
Yeah. And they went about then on their merry way. It was alleged to me that each of them signed the original. I've never seen that, so I don't know if that to be the case, but it was some months later before this was actually discovered, which a lot of people in the fellowship won't know until they hear this or read this.
Yeah. After it was published.
No. After the decision was made that they had decided to do it, it was not known. It just wasn't. They didn't run out and tell everybody we decided to do this.
So it was known before the book was published?
It was known before the book was published. They made the decision in November of 1982. Well, at the same time of this going on, while Jimmy was coming in and doing the proofreading, the printer and it was a poor choice printer. It was a one-man print shop.
Was he in the fellowship?
He should have been. And, and that became the issue at hand. It was a big business deal. It really was.
Yeah.
We're talking of what could have been tens of thousands of dollars. He apparently agreed to a very specific sum. I don't have the copy of the contract here, but I have a copy of it. And he rightly could have received and did receive advance payments. He had to pay the typesetter as a subcontractor as they went along. So he got, over the period of 5 months, about $15,000 in advance payment. But by January, he was too far behind. He'd had the manuscript since September or something, end of September, beginning of October. And in January, the thing wasn't even done. The board of directors were concerned about the delay, but at their December meeting didn't even talk about the change in language. I don't know if they knew. I should say, I don't know if Jimmy told them or if Phil Perez told them or if Bob Raymer told them. It doesn't appear in the minutes that it had been discussed.
It wasn't customary for the World Service Conference chairperson to be at that meeting?
No. He was a member of the board of directors by election by the conference. They elected him to the board in 1982.
And he's also chair of the conference?
Yeah.
Okay. So they're meeting in December.
They met in December, and they were concerned about the delay in the printer, not the language. In January, when they had their first meeting, their concern again was over the delay in the printing as opposed to anything else, but there was some discussion of the change in language. They elected, apparently, in January to go have a confrontation with the printer. They went down and determined the guy was leaving town. They collected up all the stuff they thought belonged to NA and took it back to the office. They had the fortune of accidentally coming in contact with a person who had the ingenuity and skill to put the book together, a woman named Jeannie. And
remember?
And after about a month's time, into the middle of February, actually February 21st, they finally gave her the okay to go ahead and do it. So between February 21st and April 27th, she got the book produced. When it had taken the literature committee in the office all those other months of slow time.
This is what we know today as the Red Book.
The Red Book and the Blue Book. There were 5,000 copies of the book printed at the same time by Dale Pettit Lithium Company in Sun Valley. And they put 2,500 covers, plus or minus a few, on the books that were red and another 2,000 in the blue.
Oh.
So they ended up picking up these books at the company that put the covers on in Jimmy's truck on April 27th. They drove to the World Service Conference and gave and sold our books.
Mm-hmm. So that's the first edition.
So the question here about were the difficulties with the first printing settling the satisfactions, I wasn't involved in it at that time, but it was done eventually. Soon after this, the problem with the fourth and ninth editions were an issue. Can you tell us about these times? Well, eventually, Page learned of the fourth and ninth change.
And is it a he?
Yeah.
Page. He was still World Literature Chair.
He was Chair of the Literature Committee. And I certainly, you know, wouldn't have talked to him at that time because it was between conferences.
Right.
I'm sure he went ballistic.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that all the people who were closely associated with the book and with Page went ballistic. And they proceeded to do their best to do something about it. First of all, they attempted to tell the office, either you print it the way it was approved by the conference or don't print it. And they threatened legal action, and there were telephone calls and letter writings, and the board of directors eventually decided to ignore the threats
of literature
and went ahead and published the book
with the changes that have been made.
Mm-hmm.
At the conference, because of the controversy, the fellowship was up to the eyeballs with anger, and they voted to instruct that this book be reprinted and the language put back in. And it was.
Hence the second edition. The
second edition came out with the language we instated. No mention was ever made of what to do with the other 5,000 books. The presumption was essentially, we need a book so we're going to use it even if it's difficult to approve. The following year, in 1984, at the end of the conference, Chuck Yates rose to make a motion that said...
What was Chuck's position?
He was then chair of the board of directors still, and a voting member of the conference. He rose and said, I think that Jimmy was right. And I think we ought to ask the fellowship in a group conscience matter and propose that a letter be sent to every voting region and every voting delegate, giving them a chance to have all the information and have them send back their answer, which way they're going to vote, to include or not include. The conference adopted that proposal. Rose Sewell wrote the position paper that said it should remain as it is in the second edition, and Chuck Yates wrote the language for changing it back to the way the first edition language read, which was without the language.
What was Bo's position?
Bo was a member of the Board of Trustees at the time, and he, of course, had been so responsible for the basic text anyway.
Yeah.
That people would have naturally gone to him for that.
Right. Go ahead.
The letters were sent out, the letters were received, and the vote was in favor of returning it to the way Jimmy had suggested it should be.
The letters were to regions or groups?
They were to voting participants.
RSRs.
Voting participants.
Oh, that's okay, all right.
So it went to all the RSRs that were then on record, and to the trustees and the board of directors in person. And the conference voting for this
chair, vice chair.
And that's how that vote was occurred.
Do you remember the vote?
Oh, I don't remember precisely. There was a report later written about it some years later, after I left. I remember there were 38 votes in favor of the returning the language to the way Jimmy had suggested it should be. And there was a less number. It was a two-thirds vote, close to two-thirds.
In favor.
In favor of the change. The interesting thing, of course, is that the matter never came up again on the floor of the conference in succeeding years. No one ever proposed that they should change back. So there's always been the mystique about the fact that somebody changed the language based text, but motions never came back in 85 and 86 and 87. To reinstate the language as it was originally approved by the fellowship.
So the motion to find out what everybody wants to do is all they had. There was never actually a motion to fulfill what was voted on. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that after this vote by mail had been taken,
yeah.
Motions were not in such conferences advanced by regions or individuals who were able to make motions that they should reinstate the language at the second printing, which is the language that was approved originally by the conference.
So it's like a surrender of sorts.
Well, that's what it seemed to me, but ever since then, there's been the people beating the bushes about the fact they changed the language, when all this time there's always been the opportunity to change it back. And the people who have screamed and moaned and cried haven't followed the legitimate course of changing, which kind of puts it into a matter of suspect motives in my view. Okay, where are we at in your questions here?
It was just past the first edition.
Okay, funding began to change rapidly with the production of the text. How did that cause difficulties, or didn't cause any difficulties at all? The more books were sold, the more income was produced, and the more things the office could do that the office should have been doing all along.
That's our time.
Well, services. Yeah. Services. Over the years, a vast amount of money that came from the basic text sales was invested in translations and group service activities to help groups all across the world.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't cause a problem until, I'm sure, much later after I left. The office took over the secretarial position of the WSC in what year? Did this add difficulties at the WSO? In 1983, the conference had its own secretary, a girl named Carol Kay, and she and I worked very closely together during the year she was secretary. At the conference the following year, she was one of the people who helped type the minutes of the conference as we did the conference. We had brought the staff we had and computers to work on and did the bulk of the work.
That would be at the Airedale?
No, this was still at the Retail Clerks Union Hall, Santa Monica, the main floor. And we did the majority of the work. After that conference was over, the only real duty that the secretary of the conference did was very, very minimal. We had assumed from 84 and beyond all the tasks that the secretary would have done.
Mm-hmm.
The official transformation didn't take place until several years later, but we had already long since been doing all the work.
So it was it an official motion then?
Yeah.
Years later?
Yeah, I was in trying to encourage that, because what had occurred is that the conference in 84 elected the woman that I had as my secretary in the office as an employee. They elected her the assistant secretary of the conference. And the system they were following at that time was that a person would serve 2 years and then step up and serve 2 years. So in 2 years, this lady would be a voting member of the conference. And I wasn't in favor of that, and the board of directors wasn't in favor of that. So we eventually encouraged the conference to see the wisdom of changing and dropping the role of the secretary from an officer position to the conference. There was, I believe, no opposition to that change when it was voted. Okay. WC passed motions to edit the text. What were the reasons for this to be delayed for 3 years? It was an interesting deal, and it would take a couple of days for me to explain.
The motions about the...
There was a motion advanced, I think it was in 85.
They changed the 12th step, didn't they, in about 86?
They changed the what?
12th step, didn't they? As a result of these steps instead of those steps?
Well, you're asking a specific thing that I don't remember.
Okay. That's not one of them, I guess.
The specific language of what the conference approved is something that I had paid very close attention to, but there were so many changes over the years. I don't remember one after another.
Oh, okay.
But
the 3 years.
The things that took place in doing them, I remember those things about them. The way the motion was worded, it gave authority to the World Service Office to have this book edited. And after the conference was over, the literature chairperson and I had, over a period of time, a long series of discussions.
Just Mike?
No, this was what was her name? She was from Delaware. Maggie. And we explained a little bit. Suzanne. It was in 85, so it would have been Suzanne. Suzanne was from New Jersey. And I recall explaining to her on several occasions that we really didn't want this job. This was a responsibility of the Literature Commission, not us. And we worked out an agreement that when we got around to doing it, we would hire somebody if they would help us find the person and help in the selection process. So it was probably the fall of 85 before we got into the selection process.
And it took us about 6 months for them to find somebody that they were satisfied with. Because the office board of directors, nor the staff, were going to take on the task of us editing the book. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just out of the question entirely. So the committee found a member from Texas, I believe, and they'd gone through a process of re-advertising it in the news line. Mm-hmm. It was reported in the fellowship reports. We asked people who wanted to volunteer for this task as a paid person to do it to send resumes, and they did that, and that took months to settle down. They finally then gave us a person's name, and we drafted a contract. The person that we used, and they started over again.
On their search.
On their search.
Yeah.
The person had done no work in the years. They had just been selected. We search again, and I think in the summer of 86, which had been about a year and a few months after the motion was adopted, they gave us another person. We contracted with that person, and they spent about 5 months working on it, 4 months. And they had, Michael Lee was then chair of literature, and they had periodic contact. How much that? No, but I'm going to presume it was probably weekly contact.
Weekly? Yeah.
Mike was a very diligent person and wouldn't have let something like that lapse. Mm-hmm. When the work was done, it was given to the literature committee. Actually, the literature review committee, which was a subcommittee of the literature committee. The literature review committee then spent probably 4 or 5 months, because the editing would have been done, say, November, December of 86, and the literature review committee then spent months working on it, which would have been about the time of the conference when they were probably finished with it. They then gave it to us to print, and we sent it off to the printer. And I remember writing a letter in September of 1987 to Mike Lee as the chairperson, saying, I really don't believe we should publish this book. I believe we should send it back out to the fellowship for review. I had not read the book. I had not read the edit. I had not prepared the changes. But knowing how particular I felt the fellowship had been and wanted to be over its basic text, I thought we should have it go out for a year's review. The literature committee decided to ignore my suggestion and instruct us to print. So we printed, and the books became available in October, and all hell broke loose.
The fourth edition.
So that's what took so long. We had a long time negotiating on what was going to get done after the motion was adopted. We had to search and find somebody twice. Then the literature committee spent months going over it, and then we had to print it. The part the office had to do was two parts. One is to provide the language for the editor to work from, and then to print it when the committee was finished with. And it was in the beginning of that process that the biggest mistake was made. And that is that I did not foresee that there would be a problem in the retyping of the basic text for the use by the editor. And it was in that retyping that portions of it were omitted. It was sheer accident.
The pasty?
Well, no, the pasty meant that was something else. That was a different thing. Pasties were the correction.
Paragraphs were not.
The pasties, the only time things ever got pasted was text was in 84, after the vote had been made to return the language of the Fourth Amendment traditions to the way Jimmy had it read. We had books in stock at that time that were the second edition. So when the vote came in, the board of directors said, make the little pasties and put it on the books so that they read the way the fellowship has just voted. Okay. But in the case of the fourth edition of Word of Pasties, the job was too monumental. There were too many pages affected this book.
Nice.
But in the typing from the third edition to the manuscript that the editor was going to use, I did not apparently think that it was going to be a problem.
Shouldn't have
been a problem. Yeah. So I didn't force a word-for-word reading of what was typed to what we've been printing. And in that way, what occurred is that as the person was typing would read across this line and they would see the word solutions here, and they might have gotten distracted or turned their head, and they came back and saw solutions another line down, and that's where they typed. So they missed the words in between.
Wow.
Just, and that occurs. I'm a typist from way back when, and I know that occurs with me all the time.
Yeah.
And you have to be careful. You have to go back and check.
Yeah.
And we didn't proofread. And that was the error.
So what the editor was working on and what he edited and sent to the printer,
what the editor had was missing language that no one appeared to have noticed was missing. And then when the literature committee then later worked on it, they didn't go back and check it, apparently.
Literature review. Yeah.
They didn't go back and check it, apparently. I'm going to presume that when they noticed changes, if they noticed them at all, they assumed that the editor had intended it.
Mm.
So may not have questioned it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if they actually found those or not. I've never asked. But when they were satisfied, this is the way we went the book to read, they gave it to us. I said I had reservations. I said tenants, so we repented it. And when it came time for the truth to come out, we assigned a task of staff to read it word for word.
Right.
And that's when the enormity of the oversight had become apparent. And
I think you addressed the conference.
I wrote a special report as soon as I found out in the fellowship at the conference and explained what had happened and apologized for being poor enough as a manager to have not prevented this.
Well, it seems like one of those things that you would not have to keep your thumb on.
Well, it's the kind of thing that under all of the circumstances in my time with fellowship that I did. Every time we printed a pamphlet or something, I would always proofread it myself before we printed it. And there were a couple of occasions when things got that far before it was found. But usually the staff was excellent in preventing all those things. We had a woman who sat behind her, Ginny, and she was just, I would use the word overbearingly meticulous about accuracy. So it was a surprise and embarrassing for us.
I made a motion in the Show Me region that they laminate just for today reading.
Yeah.
And it was approved by our region and brought to the conference. A year and a half later, it was finally taken care of. And I got one of the first editions of the laminated just for today.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was mistaken.
Yeah. I had to call the office and tell them.
I really felt stupid about that one, too.
Oh, you were the office?
I remember that.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe it. Make such a fundamental error.
How was the decision to hire an outside editor for the It Works How and Why project reached? That was begun in 1984, at the beginning of the year. The literature committee had, in November of 83, had a workshop in San Diego, and they had worked on what was then available of Steps and Traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gone to that workshop and assisted in the workshop. Bob Raymar and I went together and sat some of the same committees. Bob Barrett was there, Bud Kronberg, Michael Lee, and other people who later became responsible for a lot of this stuff. There existed in the language of the literature committee at the time words that permitted the literature committee to use a wide variety of resources. It was their belief that that range of resources included the ability to hire people to help them with the work. They asked the World Service Office, the Literature Committee, if we would consent and put up the money to hire someone to do the work that they wanted to have done. And my philosophy, that the board of directors echoed that philosophy, was if a committee asked us to do something that was reasonable for us to do, and seemed the correct thing to do, then we would do it. And a year later, when the PI committee came to us and said, we'd like to make public service announcements, but no, the conference didn't tell us to, but we think it's a good idea, will you do it? We put up $36,000 overnight to get PI video of things made. People loved it.
Yeah.
So that's the two examples have always been parallel. When a committee came to us and said we want to do something that was reasonable, if we had the money, or if we get the money, we could do it. And that's how it was started. They came to us and said we want somebody to do this.
They just didn't feel they were capable?
You would have to look at the literature resource material that was available at the time to make a good judgment about answering that question.
There's an enormous...
There was so little material after the workshop in San Diego on some of the traditions that you could put three of the tradition language in the input on one page.
Wow.
I recall at the workshops, we followed the same process that the committee had used for years under Bow, that is to cut and paste. And in San Diego, what the committee fundamentally did is took all the stuff that was there and cut it and put it in its proper order. Well, most of it was duplicate. Most of it was out of basic text. On the language of the traditions, there was almost nothing that wasn't already in the basic text. The steps, it was a little bit more material, but it wasn't of the same kind of nature where you could cut and paste it.
Right.
Some people had written eloquently about their understanding of a step, and other people had just taken quotes out of the basic text and said this is how the step should be worded in this new publication. They just weren't going to match. You just couldn't stick this in here someplace and have it read them. So something had to get done, and the literature committee felt that since the office was more financially stable now, perhaps this was a way that they could get this done as a draft for them to work from, rather than expecting the committee to come up with the draft material.
Hmm.
So that was what took place in getting that started. And a quick search was made, and a person was found to work on that. And we negotiated the contract and signed the deal, and they started work. And they met with the Board of Trustees informally and had long discussions about steps and long discussions about training traditions. And I recall seeing transcriptions. There were just dozens of pages. I think they altogether spent probably 25 days in gathering input from around the country. People were brought in from across the country in fellowship to sit and talk with the people who were going to do this, and this was all transcribed. So then they took the stuff to their home and began to work on it. And
this was the editor?
Well, yeah, it was the person that the committee had selected jointly. Actually, it was a joint committee between the trustees, the office, the literature committee, and selected this person.
How are we doing on tape? We're about out. Go ahead and turn it off here.
Okay.